while Keegan attorney Barry Bacchus disappeared early in 2020. The then 65-year-old man lived in the 41600 block of North Peterson Drive South in unincorporated Antioch, Illinois. The breakdown is as follows. He was reported missing by his wife, March 25th, 2020. He was last seen approximately 7 a.m. on March 24th, 2020, and the last person to have contact with him via telephone was at approximately 11:55 p.m. on March 24th. Bacha's vehicle was located in Waukegan, but he was not in or around his vehicle. The person who reported him, I said, was his wife or estranged wife, Bieta Bacchus, and she reported to Lake County Sheriff's Office. She was concerned because she hadn't heard from him in over a day. From what I saw, they were separated, but they were still in very good terms and talked to each other constantly, and that's why she was so worried after just a day. She mentioned the clientele that he had as a lawyer, which I believe he was a defense attorney, not a prosecutor, but also they were on good terms, as I said, and they communicated regularly, often texting each other all day long. He was last seen wearing blue jeans and a black hooded sweatshirt with red lettering. He's 5'8", 190 pounds, hazel eyes with brown hair. And if you have any information, call the Lake County Sheriff's Office, 847-377-4000, or submit tips at lakecountycrimestoppers.com. People actually reported that his tone during phone conversations that they had not long before he disappeared was abnormal, and they were apparently very worried about him, or they were worried he was in danger. There are some that theorize it was suicide. I don't know. I don't know him, obviously, and I don't know these conversations. And from what I can see, the police are not releasing the details on these or who they spoke to specifically, probably because it's still an open case. It's not solved. This is completely unsolved. But the suicide thing, you wonder, why wouldn't you find the body? I'm not saying that's impossible. I guess there have been instances where someone committed suicide and they went somewhere, you know, where no one would find them. But it seems rare, right? That it just seems rare. It seems rare that at some point you wouldn't find that person, especially people who knew them. I feel like, I know if I'm depressed, which is not the same as being suicidal, I realize that, but you might go to places where you feel comfortable or safe, or even if you went far away, it's probably someplace you've been before or someplace you've been drawn to. I don't know, you know, different psychologies, different people, but the suicide angle seems a little off to me, but, you know, I don't know. Then you have his clients that apparently his estranged wife was worried about. But from what I can see, there's no evidence that they were what you might call heavy hitters or somebody, you know, the mafia or something like that. That doesn't mean someone couldn't have been upset with him. But if he was defending them, generally you would hope that they were glad of it, unless, of course, he lost the case. So he has not been seen or heard from since March 2020. So back to his wife. They were separated for several years, but it sounds like they might have been trying to get back together, or at the very least just stay close, because the police report states that their relationship had been going well and that Bieta was scared because of the clientele that something could have happened to him. This is also in the report. So, you know, what I'm mentioning to you was actually reported. He apparently had left Bieta's home, Barry had, which is in Deerfield, around 7 a.m. So that's the last person to see him, as far as we know, you know, before he was reported missing. And he told her that he was going to meet with a client later in the day. And she says that he didn't take a bag with him or anything, and everything seemed to be fine. So it sounds like he had maybe been staying there, or I don't think they were living together. In fact, yeah, I know he stayed in other places, but he probably had some items there. So he left without taking anything, which would indicate he wasn't planning on taking a trip, I assume. Or that could mean that maybe he had moved back in, so she's, surprised, like, well, he didn't take a bag, so where did he go? They exchanged several text messages throughout the day, and he texted her around 12 p.m. and told her that he was still working on some continuing education, like something to do with work. She responded to him at 2 p.m., and Barry replied that he was with a client, so I assume, couldn't talk to her. He was with a client, couldn't talk to you for now. There was then a long gap in their communications. So this is about 2 p.m. until approximately 11 p.m. when he then texted her again, saying that he was done with things, quote, up north, and that he was planning to stay there for the night. The report states that she, Beta, got upset, and Barry told her that he would explain in the morning. So again, it sounds like they must have been staying together again, or sometimes people separate, but they still share the house for, different reasons. So she persisted, I assume, like, why aren't you coming home? Why are you staying up there? What's going on? And then he reportedly told her that he had the virus and that he needed to stay away from them. Because he has a son. I don't know that the son was living there already grown. And this is all, again, according to police reports that people obtained through the Freedom of Information Act as well. So we have, this is 2020, so obviously the virus would be COVID, right? This would be super early, though. Like it was just really starting to go around America. So it's very interesting. I'm not saying it couldn't be true, but why didn't he just say that in the first place? Maybe he didn't want to worry her. But if he had COVID and let's say it killed him, why can't you find him? It's still very strange. And to say to her suddenly, it seems very strange. So then it goes on to report that they exchanged some emojis, I suppose little smileys, who knows, whatever. Hello, hello, goodbye, goodbye, love you. And Barry told her good night before he apparently turned off his phone and no longer responded to her. She told the sheriff's deputy that Barry didn't have any alcohol or drug dependencies and was not at a risk to himself or others. So she's saying that he wasn't suicidal. When he didn't come home the next morning or make any contact, no texting, nothing, the next morning, that's when she got really worried and called the police. They reached out to Barry's business partner, or she did, I should say, his wife, Bieta. And the business partner told her that he had not had any contact with Barry. The business partner went to Barry's law office, which was located at 409 Grand Avenue in Waukegan, and stated that everything looked fine and nothing was disturbed. So deputies then contacted the business partner, and he told them that he was at the office in the afternoon on March 25th, 2020. And he told them that nothing appeared strange, but he did check the appointment book and noticed that there were no appointments scheduled for Barry that day, except for regularly scheduled court dates. Deputies checked an address, which I guess was in these books or somewhere, who knows, because it's been redacted in the police report, but there were negative results. And they spoke to a neighbor who said that Barry had been moving things to a friend's house for storage. The neighbor thought it was odd that Barry's trailer was at the house, but not his truck. I assume a moving trailer or whatever he was using to move these things. The Waukegan Police Department soon after this located Barry's 2015 Chevrolet Tahoe parked on a side street in Waukegan, approximately 2 miles away from his law office. And Bacchus, of course, was nowhere around the vehicle and not in it. Detectives checked the whole area, canvassed, did their investigations, and no one saw who had been driving the vehicle when they interviewed people. Nobody had any eyewitness accounts. They just knew that the vehicle had been there for a couple of days. Unfortunately, there were no cameras in the area, so they couldn't check any video evidence, and there was no evidence of blood or foul play inside the Chevy Tahoe. There's just so little to go on, and it's and being parked 2 miles away from his office, I don't know what the parking is around. I mean, I've had to park a little ways away from where I'm going before, but 2 miles does seem excessive, unless I don't know what else is in that area that he might have been going to. But that's fairly close to his office and yet a bit far away to think, oh, you're parking to walk to your office, right? Most people, I feel like, try to get as close as possible. Let's just admit it. Most people do, unless it's just utterly crowded. But 2 miles seems pretty far to go. So they have noted also that records show that Barry's residence in unincorporated Antioch was sold June 2020, and his law firm is listed as permanently closed on Google. Now, anybody could have done that, I assume, although, as someone who has a business profile on Google, usually there's only one person that can run the entire thing. I would have assumed that was him, but maybe not. I know people can make suggestions about businesses. Maybe his partner had access. I don't know. But of course, it probably would be if we don't know where he is. So McHenry County Scanner, which is where I'm getting a lot of this information, Lake and McHenry County Scanner. The person in charge is Deputy Chief Christopher Covelli, said that the investigation is ongoing. He states that sheriff's detectives have investigated over 200 leads into the disappearance, and some of the leads were a result of investigative efforts and various new portions being uncovered. Some are a result of tips from the community, and there are several leads being investigated at this time. Now, at the time of the latest information I could find so far was February of this year. All the same stuff comes up over and over, which is basically copying each other. It's just other people reporting the same thing. And there's just not hardly any information. Again, I assume some of this stuff is just not being put out because it's an ongoing investigation and that's very common. But at the same time, it's really frustrating because it just leaves obviously a lot of speculation. Covelli actually mentioned that there have been many twists and turns in the investigation, that usually missing persons cases are concluded within hours, but obviously not this one. Covelli has also said that Botch's disappearance had unusual characteristics. But exactly what these are still a bit of a mystery. It was September 2020 that Lake County Sheriff's Office mentioned that the FBI was providing some technical support, but they are not assisting in the case. However, they're still a resource if the sheriffs need them. So, once again, he was last seen wearing blue jeans, a black hooded sweatshirt with red lettering, 5 foot 8, 190 pounds, hazel colored eyes, brown hair. If you have information, call Lake County Sheriff's Office Detectives 847-377-4000 or submit a tip to Lake County Crime Stoppers at www.lakecountycrimestoppers.com. A little side note on Barry Butch's work as an attorney. If you went to his LinkedIn, he is listed as a trial attorney. About section says providing outstanding criminal and traffic defense based on 40 years trial experience. Received 2014 Top Attorneys in Illinois Award. 2015 award for 15 years of outstanding legal help and as reviewed by peers. So let's see, skills, criminal law, DUI defense, litigation, legal research, legal writing, civil litigation, corporate law. I mean, it's not impossible that some former client was upset with him. It's not impossible. Or just because they were not well in the first place. So I can't seem to find much else. So I thought we will focus on other missing person cases. I just want to bring some to everybody's attention. So now I want to give you a bit of statistics and just make this a missing persons episode. We can't find a lot of information on Barry. If you go to worldpopulationreview.com, they give a rundown of the statistics of missing persons and also by state. According to the National Missing and Unidentified Persons Database, which is funded by the U.S. Department of Justice, more than 600,000 persons of all ages go missing every year, and approximately 4,400 unidentified bodies are recovered every year. So the vast majority of these cases are resolved fairly quickly. For example, in 2012, there were 661,000 missing persons cases reported, but more than 659,000 of them were resolved within a year. That doesn't always mean they're alive, sadly, but the case is solved for closure. Researchers also say that the number of missing persons cases has declined over the past decade because of better communication, which has made it easier to keep in touch with people and to track people. There are still, though, more than 17,000 missing person cases and 13,000 unidentified body cases open in the United States, and this is 2022. So that's 30,000 total. In absolute terms, California has the largest number of missing persons at 2,133, but you have to think about the ratio, the population. It means that 5.4 missing persons per 100,000 people are missing in that state. So the highest rate by this ratio is actually Alaska, with 41.8 missing people per 100,000 of the population. That's five times California's. And it's 3.5 times the rate of number two, which is Arizona, 13 missing people per 100,000. The lowest ratio, if you will, would be Massachusetts, 1.8 missing persons per 100,000, and then Rhode Island, because it's tiny, has 20 people missing. It's not funny. I'm just like, wow. So, as listed, and again, think about the populations. California, 2,133. Florida, 1,252. Texas, 1,246. All big states, right? Arizona, 915. And then I was thinking about my state, Washington, where I live, because we have a lot of open territory, and we are number five, 643. New York, 606. Remember, it's not just the city. You have a whole lot of stuff upstate and outside of the city. Michigan is number seven at 556. There's the whole Upper Peninsula there in particular, which has a lot of open spaces. Oregon, 432. Pennsylvania, 401. And Tennessee, 361. So it's not uncommon, but of course, this doesn't list all the reasons people go missing, and that is vast. So, something else I want to say about Washington State is that we are apparently the first ones very recently to create the first alert system for missing Native and Indigenous peoples. Because this is something I wanted to bring up, the problem of missing white woman syndrome. Because let's be honest, all of these are tragic cases, but we know who gets the attention in the media, and it's very rarely someone who is not pretty and white. You guys all followed the Gabby Petito thing, which was an utterly horrible thing that happened. I followed it too. It's a horrible, horrible thing. And yet, we're constantly shoving to the side anyone of color or Native and Indigenous people. There was a podcast I tried to, maybe I should try again, that I tried recording like two or three times and I got so pissed off and so incensed. I'm like, it might be okay to be a little righteously angered, but at the same time, it wasn't the sort of thing that I felt I could put out for listeners because I just got, and that was The Highway of Tears. Look it up, okay? Sometime maybe I'll try to do that episode again. I really should. But all of the murder and missing cases along this particular highway up in Canada of Indigenous women, children. It's a terrible, it's an epidemic. And here in Washington State, we apparently have at least 114 Native Americans who are missing, which is, and they are 2% of our entire population. So that's not a very good ratio there. Nationally, as of August 2021, according to data from the National Missing and Unidentified Person System, there were 734 unresolved cases of missing Native people. Why do I feel like it's more? I feel like it's more. While you can find lists of their names put out by the Washington State Patrol, they don't give any other details and names and phone numbers to contact. I will link that in the show notes. I will also link an article about the excuse me, and I did just double check that it's the first in the country, an official Indigenous missing persons task force hotline, kind of like an Amber Alert. Again, I will list that in I will put it in the show notes. I want you to look it up. So, because the lists of names do not give you their stories, I found an article that will touch on some of them, and I want to share it with you. And this is from the newstribune.com. Survivors and families share stories at a gathering for missing and murdered Indigenous people. This was actually May 8th, 2022. A gray dress swung from a rod held above a crowd of 200 at Daybreak Star Indian Cultural Center in Seattle. Justice for Rosenda was spray painted in red on the front. The dress was the last item Rosenda Sophia Strong, a 31-year-old mother of four and citizen of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, had changed out of at her sister's home before she went missing in October 2018. On July 4th, 2019, her remains were found in an abandoned freezer near Toppenish, Washington. Now a symbol of the family's strength and cries for justice, the dress swung as her sister Sissy Strong Rise spoke at the National Day of Awareness and Healing for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, People, and Families, Saturday, May 7th. She was fun. She was a mother and a sister, and this is all I have left of her, Rice said at the gathering. Rice, who had received tips about her sister's whereabouts before she was found, encouraged families of the missing and murdered to advocate for their loved ones with law enforcement. They deserve to be searched for, she said. Roxanne White, founder of the survivor-led grassroots organization Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, People, and Families, invited guests to share posters and their stories of missing families. Bessie Handy, Frida Knows His Gun, Kaylee Mae Nelson Jerry, Mary Ellen Johnson Davis, Rosalita Longy, and Shalina Bulltail. Alicia Raymond, victims advocate and Tulalip Police Department program manager, stood with the family of Mary Ellen Johnson Davis and shared that her job is to act as a liaison between victims' families and law enforcement. A lot of times, families are told that they can't know information because it's an open case. They don't get updates. But there are some things that can be shared without compromising the case. Giving the family information that their case is being worked on is a lot more than nothing. And she hopes that other law enforcement agencies will follow the tribe's example. Fiscal sponsor Naha Elahi Fund, a Seattle-based Indigenous woman-led organization, set up a booth to talk about their Red Blanket Fund, which provides direct assistance to individuals and families most in need of support while in search of missing loved ones or aftercare. They also have computers set up for guests to take the Native Neighborhood Survey, which is a questionnaire to help the organization advocate for further planning, funding, and investments for the Indigenous community in Seattle. There's a Native-owned art and lifestyle branch, Eighth Generation, which donated 10 blankets to be gifted to honored guests who are survivors, family members, and victim advocates. Anita Lichesi, Carolyn Defford, Deborah Mutubi Shipman, Lenny Hayes, Lissa Yellowbird Chase, Matthew Warbonnet, Mildred Ann Quay-Emps, I'm sorry that I'm probably saying your names wrong, Neisha Jackson, and Patricia Whitefoot. Songs, dances, and prayers were offered from the West Shore Canoe Family, Tulalip Youth, and Seattle Clear Sky Native Youth Council. I know exactly where the Daybreak Cultural Center is. It's an amazing place, and it's in a Discovery Park, which is an amazingly gorgeous place. And we have a lot of indigenous peoples, and they have a lot of lands around here, which I think makes us extra aware of what's going on, and yet we don't know enough. And now I want to give a little highlight to a couple of the people that were mentioned in the article. Bessie Ann Freedom Handy, missing since February 1st, 2021. She disappeared from Fife, Washington, which is 30 minutes or so south of me. The classification of this case is endangered and missing. Female, Native American, 34 years old, 5'2", 105 pounds. Her family does believe that she might be suffering from some sort of mental illness, some issue. She has brown hair, brown eyes, may have cut her hair very short or dyed it blonde. She has tattoos of a yin-yang symbol on her left arm, the word Native on her left shoulder, a heart on her right arm, and a small heart on her wrist. She is a member of the Puyallup tribe of the Puyallup Reservation. She was last seen at the Sunshine Motel in Fife, Washington, sometime in February 2021, and she has not been heard from again. Apparently, she has gone missing before for extended time periods, but never this long. She might have connections in the cities of Bonnie Lake, Puyallup, Spanaway, Sumner, and Tacoma, Washington. They are worried that she's homeless, and there are very few details available in her case. Then you have Mary Ellen Johnson Davis. Over a year ago, 40-year-old Mary Ellen Johnson Davis was reported missing by her husband. Last seen November 25th, 2020, so this is 2 years ago now, I think I'm looking at an older article, walking on Fire Trail Road, where she had arranged to a ride to Arlington from a friend. This is north of me, about an hour and a half. She was not heard from again, and she did not make it to this arrangement, her plans. She didn't get to follow through with her plans. Both the FBI and the Tulalip Tribal Police are asking for help from the public to find Johnson Davis. The FBI actually committed $10,000 as a reward for information on top of $50,000 from the Tulalip Tribe. So as an enrolled member of the Tulalip Tribes, or she is an enrolled member of the Tulalip Tribes, she has black hair and brown eyes, 5'6", 115 pounds. She has a scar across her nose, a birthmark on the back of her neck, and a sunburst tattoo on her upper right arm. Tulalip, you know, a lot of the reservations also have their own police, especially if they're big enough. So Tulalip Tribal Police Chief Chris Sutter said that they are looking into all of the leads, and they're hoping that this enhanced fund, this reward of $60,000, will increase the tips. Maybe there's a newer update on this. I don't know if they've added to the rewards. So if you have any information on the whereabouts of Mary Ellen Johnson Davis, contact Tulalip Tribal Police at 360-716-5918. Now, her sisters have been raising awareness and asking for help, and they spoke about her case at a meeting co-hosted by Yakima Nation and the Washington State Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and People Task Force, which I believe is the thing I just told you about. And I will then go to the case of Frida Knows His Gun. Frida Knows His Gun called a friend on October 18, 2016. She was at Walmart in Kennewick, Washington, and asked her friend to wire her some money so she could get home. Frida wanted to be home in time for Halloween so she could take her three children trick-or-treating. She said she would be waiting at Walmart customer service desk. So her friend agreed to send her the money. 15 minutes after she wired it, she called to see if Frida picked it up. She hadn't. The friend was unable to reach Frida, and the money was never accepted. What happened to this 34-year-old mother in just a few minutes' time that kept her from picking up the money? Where is she? She hasn't been seen or heard from in 5 years. This, actually, by the time of this article, this was probably written, it's at medium.com, so I should say 6 years because it's 2022 now. Because she went missing in 2016. So her children have been growing up without her. Some agencies have her missing person report listed as Frida Nosegun, just like Knowsgun, Nosegun, with everything just kind of smooshed in together. And some have it as Frida Noses Gun, all smooshed together, which are all inaccurate, so that's kind of frustrating. And some have it listed as separate words, some such as Frida Knows His Gun or Frida Knows Gun. So this is the difficulty with translating indigenous names as well, which can cause other issues. So who was she? A daughter, a sister, an aunt, and very importantly, of course, a mother of three children. She was born March 14th, 1982. She is one of 16 children in her family, well liked both in school and out. Everyone who remembers Frida in school says she was very smart and very intelligent. This is a sentiment that is echoed by everyone who knew her. She attended Little Bighorn College for a while, also. She would go on to then have three children whose names are Lyrical, Mason, and Trinity. That's just beautiful, by the way. Lyrical, Mason, and Trinity. Shortly before her disappearance, she had begun hanging out with a new crowd. And apparently, her family didn't know a lot about these new friends. And for unknown reasons, Frida left the Crow Agency area and Montana in general to then come here to the state of Washington. And some people said that she left the area with a black man that was identified only as Mike, but it wasn't mentioned if there were any others with him as well. The author here ponders whether or not. That because the family had repeatedly mentioned Frida was hanging out with a new group of people in the weeks leading up to her disappearance, if that person has anything to do with it. So again, for some reason, Frida did leave the area, maybe with this new friend called Mike. The facts in the timeline reported are that on October 18, 2016, Frida called the friend, told them that she was in Kennewick, Washington. Wanted to come back home, as we started with at the top of this article, asked the friend to wire money so she could go back to Montana. She's actually from Montana. So yes, the friend agreed to send her money. Frida said she would wait by the customer service desk. The friend said she ran into problems sending the money because they kept misspelling Frida's last name. So she calls Frida back at the number that she had called from to confirm that it went through. But Frida didn't answer. So the friend called Walmart customer service to make sure that the money was there for Frida, and it was, but they told her that Frida wasn't there. And her friend kept calling to see if she ever picked up the money, and no one picked up the money. So this is obviously very suspicious. Even if she was mixed up into something she shouldn't have been, I agree with the author here, that you would think she would pick up the money. Because, why did she ask for it in the first place? She must have really needed it for something. And if the friends were trying to get her to do something, they would have wanted to make sure she got the money. Maybe they wanted the money from her, right? Somebody would have got it. So Frida's mother, Barbara, reported her missing on November 14th after Frida missed her aunt's funeral. They had always been, the family were close, but they knew something was wrong. Or that Frida was in trouble somewhere. Now, I know that sounds like a long time between October and November, but she wasn't even living with them. Unfortunately, that's something that can happen sometimes. You don't know anything's going on with the person if they're not living right with you, or you're not constantly in contact every single day, or sometimes you just figure that they're off doing something, right? It's not against the law to disappear. It's not against the law for an adult to choose to go do things and not tell you. It's not. That's We sometimes get frustrated with the police for why didn't you do anything for such and such a time? Or you want to blame somebody, or people want to blame themselves. Why didn't I report it? Well, because generally, unless you know immediately that there was already something going on, you might just assume the person is they're out there being an adult somewhere. When it comes to underage, it gets you have to pay attention more. I'm not saying you don't pay attention to the adults, but they don't simply just have the right to disappear necessarily, and so it can be treated differently. So when it comes to adults disappearing, it can get kind of frustrating. It does mention here too what I was just saying, that they don't feel that law enforcement took it seriously. Frida's mother doesn't think that they took it seriously, which I'm not saying that Barbara's wrong, by the way, because I know sometimes they say that at first, oh well, maybe she'll come home, which is not completely out of the realm of possibility. But if after time they keep saying that, and time can just be a few hours, mind you, because if the family is assuring you that, well, they don't do that, and this is out of the ordinary, and this is not a way that this person has ever behaved, you should be taking that seriously. I've heard so many cases where it's like, oh, they probably ran away from home, but they've never run away from home in their whole life before, and they never, et cetera. If you listen to true crime, you know. And they did tell Barbara, oh, she's probably just out partying. Even if she was, don't you kind of want to take it more seriously, or at least not frickin' tell the family who is scared and worried, like, oh, she's just out partying? I mean, I don't know how they said it to her, but I feel like no matter what tone you said this in, you don't want to say some shit like that. So as time goes on, she was finally listed in missing person databases, but every time her name is spelled differently. So Barbara was left to raise Frida's children, but she does believe that Frida is out there alive somewhere. Barbara has said, I would know in my womb if she was dead. I don't know if she's mad at me, but it doesn't matter. She needs to come back. Her children need her. I can't give them what they need. And because her disappearance does span over state lines, that's why the FBI eventually became involved, which helped this get listed into additional databases. So that is one of the big difficulties in cases of Indigenous women, is to have them labeled as missing in the national databases, to actually have them labeled. Apparently, the FBI thinks that she might have gotten mixed up in drugs. There is a possible sighting a few months after Frida disappeared in Billings, Montana, but it was never 100% confirmed. Law enforcement, which this is not, I've lost my words. I'm not surprised they think this. They believe that she's likely deceased, even though the family thinks that she's alive and maybe living somewhere else now. So maybe they do know something, like, well, it's not out of the realm of possibility. An interesting thing that happened is an FBI agent called Frida's family and asked if they had heard of the drug hotspot. He said when it's taken, it makes the person lose their memory. So there is a drug called hotspot. That's one I hadn't heard of. Have you heard of it? That is actually really scary, because that means somebody could give it to you and totally mess with you. If you lose your memory, that's creepy, scary, creepy, scary. So the family didn't know anything about that drug. I wouldn't, would you? And they waited for a follow-up call regarding this question, but none ever came. Nobody ever talked about it again. So Frida's children are now teenagers. Almost everyone on the reservation, or a reservation, knows someone personally who has gone missing. That's how bad this is. That's how bad this is. Have you seen the pictures of the people with the red hand over their mouths, maybe even the black hand, but mostly that's what this is, okay? It's been said that whenever a body is discovered of a missing Indigenous person, the entire community holds their breath to find out who it is. Once again, Frida knows his gun was last known to be in Kennewick, Washington, October 18th, 2016, missing for almost 6 years. She was 5 foot five, or let's say is, we'll be hopeful. She is 5 foot five. weighed about 150 pounds at the time her disappearance. Her hair at that time was waist length, but often worn in a ponytail or bun. She was 34 years old at that time. Today would be 39, 40. I think she would, did it say she was born in March? So she'd be 40. A long scar on her right elbow and has several tattoos. She has the names of her children. I'm going to choke up now. She has the names of her children, Lyrical, Trinity, and Mason, tattooed on her back between her shoulder blades. A cartoon character, Mickey Mouse, holding a basketball on her right calf, and a flower and initials on her right shoulder. Two masks, and her last name, Knows His Gun, on her upper right arm. If you have any information on Frida Knows His Gun's whereabouts, please contact the Crow Agency Bureau of Indian Affairs at 406-638-2631. I will link all of these things in the show notes. I want to thank Jennifer on medium.com, October 23rd, 2021, who summed this up. She got information from the Where Are They podcast, which, as I recall, is a podcast all about missing people. I think I had intended to start listening to that, as a matter of fact, so you should check it out. Where Are They podcast, and then other online sources, and probably also the Where Are They podcast had gotten their information, same sources. Let me check here. The podcast can also be found on Facebook, Instagram, at the Where Are They podcast, YouTube, and Twitter, at Can We Find Them on Twitter. And they have regular case updates. So I don't know about you, but I'm immediately going to go and follow them and look them up right now. And I recommend, I know there are other ones that I have looked up as well. Okay. Another one that I was going to start listening to, and I think you should too, is called Hide and Seek. They will do seasons where they follow, they do several parts, I should say, not just one episode, but they do a multi-part series on a missing person case. And they cover the whole thing. And one of the latest ones for season three is The Disappearance of Brittany Wallace. And it is, James is the host. There we go. James Basinger. James Basinger. And they just go deep, okay? It's several episodes. Missing person Logan. I don't see the last name off the top of my head. I'm sorry. Just go listen to Hide and Seek. Go listen to Hide and Seek, okay? Because, they really get into all the details and are doing good investigative work, actually goes, interviews people. Good stuff. Jay Basinger, Hide and Seek. Okay, I'm going to end my episode for this week. I got to edit out a bunch of long silence. It was a little bit cobbled together. I didn't want to go in and just start writing up my own version of some of these missing persons things. I wanted to read other people's word. I wanted to read from Native Americans, out of their own, like the one article talking about the meeting at the Daybreak Center, Daystar Center. And I just wanted to give you some facts and some rundown because I want you to go out and check into these things. I want you to take note of them. I want you. There's so many missing person cases. I want you to share them. I want you to pay attention to them. Every little bit helps, right? Every little bit, just anything you can get out there. And I may do another one of these. I might do the Trail of Tears if I can do it without just wanting to gouge people's eyes out. Let me know. Let me know if you think I should do that, and let me know if it doesn't matter to you how angry I get. Maybe you're like, you should be angry. And I agree, I should be. And if you don't mind hearing that, if I start to get all riled up again, let me know and maybe I'll still do that episode. And if you know some good resources, because I don't know where mine went. I tried to do this about a year ago or more. Let me know. Or if you want to write to me about stuff like this, sreut at pinkyswearpress.com, or find me on Twitter at podpinky. I'm on Instagram, pinky underscore podcast, and I have my own official website because I have a book coming out called Dark Wings, and I have blogs. I can amplify things there. I'm not big or famous, but every little bit. So you can find me at pinkyswearpress.com. If you have something or you know somebody who's missing, tell me about it. Tell me about it. I will put it on here. I want to do something. I want to try to help you in some way. Sroit, Sroit at pinkyswearpress.com. Point me in a direction and I will see what I can dig up. Also, you can find me on TikTok, S underscore Roit. Thank you for listening. And I hope that a lot of these cases can be solved, at least for closure. A lot of times they end in a very sad way, but it's better to have the closure. Yeah, I think. Thank you for listening.